calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name? Buried in cheers and applause? No, there is not. Trust. Is there any word in the language more fraught with peril than trust? Who and what you trust are, without question, the most critical choices we'll ever make. With trustworthy people in our lives, life is good. Misplace your trust and you can wind up miserable, broke, jailed, or dead. So how do we know who to trust? What should be the criteria for trust? What are the signals of deception? We'll walk you through those a little later. And I'm really excited to announce something new from the dojo, a spin-off show. That's right, so hang with me, and we'll circle back to those things in a little while. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they aren't after you. That's an old quote. Some say it's from Joseph Heller's novel Catch-22, which, in a crazy way, is one of the few books that changed my life. I'm going to take a fast detour and tell you how right now. Nations all over the world spend billions glamorizing war. Not just through their own propaganda departments, but the U.S. government was very instrumental in making sure that Hollywood depicted military service in a positive, even a comedic light, huh? From World War II right through Vietnam. Abbott and Costello joined the army, and Francis the Mule, and dozens of other idiotic flicks that make Paris Island look like Club Hedo. As regular listeners know, I'm a big fan of our armed forces and damn proud to report that I have many listeners in uniform. And I know and have known quite a few military folks, and only the crazy ones like war. It really is hell. Great soldiers with smart governments should be in the threat business, really. And if smart governments let them do their jobs, they never have to go to war. But by senior year of high school, I was getting, like, daily phone calls from recruiters begging me to just stop by my friendly neighborhood Army, Navy, or Marine office and join up. For veracity's sake, I only ever considered the Navy. I dig boats in the ocean, and my old man was a sailor. But those jarheads were a close second, although they do tend to get their asses shot up first. So there was that. The novel Catch-22 is about World War II, set in Italy. It's a wild story which I won't attempt to summarize here, but the passage that changed my life was the one where the lead character, named Yossarian, is walking through a town in Italy which has just been reduced to rubble by bombing. And I don't recall the town, maybe it was Palermo. It's a great town, it's got cafes and restaurants, movie theaters, and it's got a bordello staffed by pointy Italian, specifically Sicilian hookers. And if I recall correctly, I read this book a long time ago, one of the few structures spared by the bombs was the bordello. And the day after the bombing, Yossarian takes a stroll down Main Street, and he sees this old guy he knew that ran a little cafe. And before the war and the bombing, each day the old man would sit out front with bread and cheese and wine and watch the glorious parade of pointy hookers on their way to work at the cat house. Now, his shop is nothing but a pile of bricks and broken glass, but amazingly, the old man is sitting on the sidewalk in front of it, at the edge of a bomb crater that could swallow a tractor trailer. And the old guy has his little round table with a gingham cloth and a bentwood chair and Chianti and a basket bottle and cheese and bread, and he's sitting there having his lunch. And Yossarian, the American soldier, he's incredulous, asking him what the hell he's doing. Doesn't he realize his town is destroyed and he's sitting at the edge of a bomb crater and there's still gunpowder in the air, for Christ's sakes, and we're in the middle of a goddamn war? And the old man carves a chunk of provolone and lays it over his crunchy, crusty bread, takes a slug of wine and nods slowly as he chews, and he tells Yossarian, "Yeah, I know all about that, but I'm hungry, and it's lunchtime, And I still got this table and chair and food and wine, and it's a beautiful day, and the whorehouse is still standing, and look, there goes a pointy hooker right now, in a tight skirt and ankle straps, so what the fuck is your problem, soldier? And when I read that passage, I had a powerful epiphany. War is war, but life goes on. And today's enemies are tomorrow's bedfellows and trading partners. Our highways are clogged with German and Japanese cars. Our clothes are made in Vietnam. And every bit of equipment I used to record this show was assembled, if not outright made, in China. So when I read the story of the old man eating lunch beside the bomb crater, it was like tumblers clicking into place. And my encounter with a retired Marine Corps drill instructor, which you can hear in episode 12, Skeletons in Larry's Closet, that made me face the truth that I wasn't cut out for the military. Those epiphanies were the recognition and acknowledgement of truth, which is your first line of defense from betrayal. Which brings us back around to that quotation about paranoia from Heller's book. And multiple times in my life, someone has said, "Ooh, you're paranoid, man," which is usually a manipulative phrase used by deceptive people in an attempt to make us ignore our own good judgment. So there's a real common red flag that usually signals some creep is about to attempt to dupe or outright betray you. Beware the P-word, boys and girls. I probably should have slated the show for March 15, the infamous Ides of March, when one of the most famous betrayals in history took place. That creepy little quizzling Mark Anthony. No, not J-Lo's cadaverous ex-husband, the Roman politician and general and his gang of weasels. They shanked Caesar like some short eyes at Pelican Bay. I just love the story. Those sex and wine-obsessed Romans were having their annual Lupercalia Festival, which was held on Feb 15. Let's call it Valentine's Day, right? The festival was held in honor of Lupa, the she-wolf who suckled the infant orphans Romulus and Remus, the founders of Rome. Don't you love those ancient terms? She-wolf, suckle. Bet there are some PC assholes who would take issue with those terms. Fuck 'em. She-wolf sounds kind of pointy. The political atmosphere of Rome at that time was not unlike right now in the USA, kind of fizzing like a lit fuse. Caesar had been named dictator for life, effectively granting him unlimited power, which wasn't going over very well with the Senate. And so on that fateful day in March, some 60 guys, that's a hell of an execution squad for one guy, 60 of them, met him near the theater and stabbed him 23 times, which means 37 of those guys chickened out. I wonder if they sounded like modern-day mob hoods when they shanked Caesar. "Hey, Julie, you ain't dictator for life."
"Oh, yeah, why not?"
"'Cause you's almost dead." So you might have to wonder, how many signals, subtle or overt, did Caesar either miss or ignore that might have saved his life? Probably a hell of a lot. Maybe he found himself suddenly eating lunch alone. Nobody wanted to walk him to the Senate. At the baths, nobody would hand him a back scrubber. Maybe he was suspicious, but let his guard down when some friend told him he was being paranoid. Little things can say so much. How many of us are derailed or destroyed because we put our trust in some deceitful entity? Might be a friend or a business partner, a lover or a spouse, or an institution or an ideology. And whether it happens on a gargantuan scale, like when an entire nation feels betrayed as in Rome, and there's a civil war and many die, or on a personal level, and part of us dies. All sorts of things piss us off, but is there anything that ignites homicidal rage like betrayal? No. Betrayal is like getting stabbed by a sword with two blades. One is the blade of treachery, the other blade cuts even deeper, the self-contempt blade, the one on which we impale ourselves for having been so stupid, so gullible. Unless you're Caesar, and you get 23 blades. But I bet as he bled out on that day, he was also kicking himself for being a chum. Broken Trust is such a powerful story that it is actually the first story, the original story of all time, right? Eve offered Adam that apple. He asked if she was sure. She said, oh yeah, trust me. He bit down hard. Shit hit the fan, and it hasn't stopped since, has it? I wonder if Eve was pointy. Did God give her ankle straps and French tips along with fig leaves and fruit trees? No one is exempt or immune from betrayal, but there are ways we can fortify our defenses, amp up our betrayal radar so we lessen our chances of getting screwed over. So let's unpack this baby some more. Unpack. That's a phrase I'm already getting sick of hearing, but let's begin with this common assumption. Those we trust the most are those we love most, right?
Wrong.
Those we most trust should be those who love us the most. Big, big difference. And that simple transposition of those words in that statement might be all you need to ensure you never get rat-fucked by a deceiver. At the very least, it's the foundation of your armor, your Kevlar Union suit, if you will. So that's rule number one. Figure out who really loves you, baby. Where does trust begin? Well, with mom and dad. More than any other thing, we need to know that we can trust our parents. And those who can't are doomed, or at least headed for one damned difficult life. Kids just need to know that mom and dad will gladly hand over a kidney or an eye or step in front of a bullet for them. But in so many cases, that's sadly not the case. And those are the people who often wind up on psychiatrists' couches, on drugs, or on coroner's tables. We have some input or choice about nearly every element of our lives except our parents. Yet the list of famous and successful orphans is pretty extensive. Aristotle, Babe Ruth, Malcolm X, many more. But as always, you have to look deeper, and when you do, you discover that although many of these people were orphaned as children, they were raised by loving grandparents or adopted by good people. But there's a flip side to loving parents. Sometimes they're overly protective. They coddle and shield kids so much, that fucks them up. When I was 7 years old, second grade, two of my classmates lost their parents, one mom, one dad. Every kid in that class attended the wakes, which were both open coffin. We saw dead people. Ooh. I vividly recall filing past those satin-lined boxes and looking at the waxy faces of my pal's parents. And that was another epiphany. One that said, people die. Parents die. Holy shit. I better appreciate and love them while I can. Today, many parents would never take their kids to a wake. Well, when and how are they supposed to learn that life is a temporary deal? I was at a Jack in the Box. I hate McDonald's, almost as much as Starbucks. I was there with one of my kids, and some poor bastard had a cardiac episode. Grabbed his chest and turned blue and slid to the floor. And some good Samaritan was on him right away with CPR while waiting for the paramedics. My kid was round-eyed and fearful, but people have heart attacks, and I told her so. Should this truth be hidden from children? Well, apparently so, because the classmate and mother of the kid we were with fled that joint as if there was a bomb about to go off. I'll bet the percentage of naivete among children of helicopter parents is off the charts. If you never see or experience the pain of betrayal, how can you ever be on alert? Only children are at a big disadvantage because there are no helicopter siblings, are there? Brothers and sisters can be great teachers even when they aren't trying. I have an older brother, and he, without really being aware, gave me my first lesson in who to trust or not. Back then in New York City, playgrounds should have been built next to hospitals. They were incredibly hazardous. Everything was designed to cripple or maim. Padding? What's that? Seesaws, monkey bars, and all the other crap was built right in the concrete. So my brother and I climb on a seesaw, and I'm about 3 and he's 6, and he's like double my weight, and of course, His end is right on the ground, and my end is 5 or 6 feet off the ground. And that's when he just steps off the seesaw. Even now, I can still see and feel that concrete coming up to kiss my face. Bow! Contusion and abrasion and pain all in one simple gravitational event. I get over the injury, but I never get over the side effect. Enlightenment. Realization. To not ever put myself in a position like that. My parents were great, but had they been helicopter parents, I'd have missed out on that valuable lesson, and maybe gotten far worse later down the road. So who can we trust? Well, after figuring out who really loves us, rule number two is, trust your own instincts. When we ignore them, we get screwed. Some years ago, there was a pretty cool movie entitled Ronin. It was some kind of spy thriller starring De Niro and the very pointy Natasha McElhone. And there was a line in there that CIA spooks were allegedly taught that kept them safe. And that line was, whenever there is any doubt, there is no doubt. Those are words to live by. When we override our feelings of suspicion, we usually regret it. Rule number three, take a page from the sharks on Wall Street. Their favorite disclaimer for investments is, past performance is not an indicator of future results. Yeah, words to live by in the financial arena. But in the arena of life and determining who to trust, we've got to turn that inside out, because past performance is always an indicator of future behavior. And so many times, people get screwed just a little by a business partner or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and we just put it behind us, shrug it off, or minimize it. And then we're surprised when they betray us in some catastrophic way. Why? Number four, never, ever give a blanket endorsement to any group, ethnicity, profession, or religion. Sneaky fucks come in every conceivable variety, and only fools will ascribe trustworthiness based on some group mythology. Howard Hughes made that fatal mistake. He had an unshakable belief that all Mormons were beyond reproach and absolutely trustworthy. He learned otherwise when he wound up dead in their care. The fifth and final rule is, ask the tough questions, especially the uncomfortable ones. Questions like, what's in this for you? What do you get out of this? Who are your references? And what's that purple lesion on the inside of your left thigh? But all our lives, we're taught to be nice and avoid confrontational questions. So we allow ourselves to be betrayed, don't we? Everybody gets conned. Even Al Capone did. And you can hear that story in bonus episode number 3, part 1, Vengeance is Ours, only at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Now, earlier I mentioned Adam and Eve, and when you think about it, the foundation of the entire Judeo-Christian religion is about trust and betrayal. God tells Abraham to slit his kid's throat, and at the last minute says, just kidding, Abe. That was a test. Time passes, and the story gets more granular and visceral with Jesus. Look how that plays out. As a kid, Joe and Mary raise him right. Actually, they were super good to him. Joe made him a partner in the family business, taught him a trade, let him live at a home until he was 30. I wonder how much his health insurance cost after he turned 26. And then JC turns 30 and strikes out on his own. He kind of digs the way his crazy cousin John the Baptist operates and figures he can riff on that. So he goes out and assembles a crew. And his crew is definitely not soy boys. Most of them are fishermen, with a tax collector thrown in to guarantee scorn and contempt from the people. And very quickly, JC comes to depend on that crew. They seem like TNS guys with balls and brains and skills. I've fished all my life, and fishermen tend not to be pussies. And together they rolled through that turf. But when the heat was on, every goddamn one of them proved to be untrustworthy. Topping the weasel list was Judas, who ratted him out for 30 pieces of silver and did it with a kiss, which of course is where we get the phrase kiss of death. And maybe Jesus' BFF Peter, take no shit Peter, who told him, yeah, Jesus, baby, I'm your guy, I got your back. Anybody screws around with you, they got to answer to me. JC told him that very night, oh, really? Well, listen, pal of mine, before the rooster crows this very dawn, you'll deny you know me 3 goddamn times. When the cops came around trying to round up the whole crew, and they questioned Big Pete, he tells them 3 times, Jesus, who's that? I never heard of that guy. So the overarching message is, don't put too much trust in people, because ultimately, they might let you down. Which brings me around to that big announcement I mentioned earlier, the spin-off show. A little background, folks. I was raised a Roman Catholic. 16 years of Catholic education. That's a lot of theology. That's a lot of church. That's a lot of scripture. That's a lot of what you're not going to get in this new spin-off show. Because, my friends, I've had a bellyful of organized religion served up by clowns, creeps, charlatans, and hypocrites. I've sat in church where the priests told everyone to whip out their cell phones so he could bless them so no one would ever say anything nasty into them. I've had robed emissaries of Christ tell me that Fidel Castro was okay and Cuba was a free country. And I hear the same stuff from friends who attend all houses of worship. And these fakes and punks have twisted and distorted, chopped and channeled and bondoed God into a monster made in their own images. But we still need help. We still need direction. We still need uplifting. Then we need to hang out at Brother Larry's Badass Sunday Snaps.
Yeah! Put your hands on your device and feel the grace of God flowing into your very soul. God knows what you did last night. God knows who you did it with. God knows he will open up a can of whoop-ass on you if you don't straighten up and fly right. So every Sunday, you're all invited over to attend Bass. That's Badass Sunday Snaps. We'll be serving adult beverages. We'll be laying down some tunes. You'll be roped in by the Lariettes. 3 hot and pointy babes with voices of angels and tongues of fire. Yeah. So y'all stay tuned and tight, because this is not your daddy's old-time religion. This will be your redemption. Not on a cross of wood, but on a velvet couch of love and understanding. So everybody, get over to thatlarryshow.com and click that subscribe by email button so you know exactly when to join us, praise Lord. Write me now at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Tell us what's ailing you, and baby, you'll make it in time for the debut episode of Brother Larry's Badass Sunday Snaps. Look for the debut on Sunday, February 11th. I'll be back with more this Tuesday. And until that time, take no shit.